Hello and welcome to the Beautiful Business Podcast, where today I'm thrilled to be joined by AI and tech expert Dan Sodergren. Now, you might recognize Dan from various TV and radio shows. He's been on podcasts. He's even written some of his own books. And today I am really excited to dig deep into his expertise in this area to try and learn about all the things that us mere mortals simply can't comprehend. Will we be amongst walking, talking robots anytime soon? How are our learning and problem-solving skills going to evolve? And what are our everyday jobs going to look like in the future? Let's find out.
I like to call AI my automated interns. It's just a better way of looking, because that's what they are. You know, that's what I use AI for. And of course, if you call it super intelligence, everyone would panic, say Terminator a lot, and everyone worried. So I actually believe truly that technology makes the world a better place. Every time it does this, it makes the world a better place. Now, definitely big argument saying, yeah, but at what cost? Honestly, if you look at all the parameters for human happiness over the globe, everything's got better. It would be great if we had a future where business didn't just look at cash, it looked at social impact and it looked at time.
Welcome to the Beautiful Business Podcast from The Wow Company. If you're growing a UK business with a team of 8 to 80 people, you're in the right place. Every fortnight, we share honest conversations with brilliant business minds, exploring the realities of leadership, the challenges that come with growth that make a real difference. From purpose to profit, people to process, this is your space for fresh thinking and down-to-earth inspiration. Dan, welcome to the show. I am so excited that you're joining me today. Thanks so much for coming on.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks very much.
No worries. We always start off the show with the same question for everybody, which is, can you tell us something about yourself that we wouldn't know from the internet or that you might not have shared too much out there before?
Oh, good Lord. I best not tell you that one or that one. And that's not to know. They're all in. It's all summer holiday vibes. There you go. I do love to travel. I do like to go to different places, as many as I possibly can.
Amazing.
I therefore have done things like, I take every 7 or 8 years, I'll take a sabbatical and I'll do a 3 months or 6 months or 9 month kind of journey to places. So I've managed to do that around Malaysia and Southeast Asia. I managed to do that around Central America. My next one's most probably going to be Japan and South Korea. And so, yeah, I do love travel. It does make me smile, though, because a gentleman many moons ago, about 2 years ago, when AI had just kind of come out, he went on the internet and the AI basically hallucinated this brilliant intro about how I was the Guinness world record holder for the amount of continents gone to in 24 hours.
So amazing.
He came on, did this intro. It's not true at all. It was so funny. My whole talk was about AI and the problems with around hallucinations. I was like, mate, you couldn't have set it up better than that. Yeah, all that's a fabrication. Do you like to travel? That's true, but that's all it got. All the rest was nonsense.
That's incredible. I love that. Wow, that's just perfect for your talks and everything, isn't it? It's so good. Cool. So you say the next one might be Japan. Is that what you said?
Yeah, I think Japan and then South Korea. That's my plan, but it's persuading my wonderful and very articulate and creative teenage daughter into doing that as well. I think that might have to go back until she's maybe 18 plus, just because she can be quite brilliant and innovative. And I'm not sure, you know, going around Japan with her very inquisitive mind might be the best thing. Basically, I don't want to lose my child in Japan because I don't speak Japanese yet. That'll be awful. Just have to just go, you know, even using AI, that's a stumbling block, even with translation. Yeah. Culturally, what have we done? Well, I've lost my daughter. Oh, good. It's great your machine speaks Japanese, but we're still stunned and we don't think you should be here. So yeah, I'm going to leave that for a few more
years. Okay, brilliant. Probably a wise choice. Brilliant. Okay, so thank you for sharing that. Let's get into a little bit about you, shall we? Like, what I'm most intrigued about, because you are positioned as an AI and tech expert, right? So what I'm most intrigued about is, when did you decide this is what I'm going to go into? And this is where I'm going to spend all of my time. When was that for you, Dan?
So I'm so old that I can remember programming on a ZX Spectrum, if anyone remembers those, which they won't, because you have to be about 50. And I was trying to program that. I remember still creating something with Tim Willoughby, bless him. And I was always the ideas person trying to do coding, and he was the coder or the programmer doing it properly. nothing's changed in those 43 years. Still the same principle. And I came up with this great thing called Spider City. And this was the plan. We did all this stuff. We coded it. That's when I fell in love with the idea that you could do something which created something on a screen which had a positive influence in people's lives. That's kind of when I got into computer gaming. And then a lot of people might not know that AI really comes from computer gaming. And so if you were into computer games back in the day, I'm very, very lucky because when I was 18, and this is through a friend of mine called Tom Old, who's actually an investor in one of my tech companies called Your Flock using AI about 7 or 8 years ago. I've known Tom since I was six. And Tom Old went to, he's brilliant, unbelievably clever guy. He was literally a right-hand man for Stephen Hawking. I mean, literally insanely clever, astrophysicist clever, right? One of his friends at university, amongst others, was a chap called Demis. Now, if you know anything about Google and Google and DeepMind, in fact, Google sold DeepMind for $458 million about 12 or 14 years ago, you know Demis is pretty important. Now, Demis was always into computer gaming. In fact, Demis, and correct me if I'm wrong, sorry, Demis, I've got this one wrong, but he created something called Railway Tycoon and theme park and things, which again, you might remember, or might not. Now, this, of course, used artificial intelligence. We just didn't call it that. We didn't call it artificial intelligence at the time. And actually, between me and you, Demis told me this literally, I had about 10 different conversations with Demis. Every single one of them has changed my life and changed the way I look at the world. It's an unbelievably clever guy. In that group, he was actually known as the not clever one because they were all so insanely clever. Demis wasn't the clever one. Demis has now won the Nobel Peace Prize. So, there you go. Demis wins. And Demis was saying all this stuff and I was listening because I'm not really bright and they are insanely clever. So whenever I used to sit there with them all, I'd talk to Demis because I understood Demis was talking about computer games in the future and AI and stuff. And I got it. I understood it. And I was like, oh, technology and coding and oh my God, this future. And he was talking about this thing literally a decade ago. And he predicted a decade ago that marketing would fundamentally change. And that's kind of why I got slightly out of marketing. And marketing as we knew it wouldn't exist. But he also predicted this thing just was between me and you, but I was so excited by this because he's literally made it happen. He predicted the idea of the infinite polygon engine. Yeah, the idea that just from something being, it could then think of everything else around it, remember the stuff it had done before, and then continue to create stuff visually. Now, DeepMind have just released a thing called Genie version 3, which pretty much does that. Yeah, pretty much does that. Now, Demis, years and years ago, created this game called Republica. And Demis, his fortunes have been up, you know, he was up 18 million, then he was down, he was almost bankrupt, and he did this other thing, went down, and he sold it to Google. Now, of course, one of the most powerful people in AI, fair play to Demis. But all those times when people were saying he was crazy, when he had no money, he was always thinking of this next thing, right? But underneath it all, he had this dream. So Republica was the idea of creating this game, which was a bit like Sims on steroids, which used politics as the driver, but also had this AI system underneath it, which understood all history and therefore could predict how well you did the future. This is what Demis make. It didn't really work because there was no AI. No AI was powerful enough to do it. He also predicted that GPUs would be used more than CPUs. No one was saying that at the time. Everyone thought it was insane. His infinite polygon engine now exists. Yeah, now that changes computer gaming fundamentally, like fundamentally, because it means that the narrative that you normally have going through a computer game isn't needed anymore. And it could almost be like a choose your own adventure game inside a computer game. I mean, inherently scary if you're in the world of IP because you no longer own the thing. It'd be interesting to see what the model becomes and how do you actually make money from it. But my God, we came up with the idea or thought of it through as a theoretical model a decade, maybe two decades ago. So yeah, that's why I'm so much into AI. That's why I'm so much into technology. It's literally through meeting people like Demis, being the stupidest person in the room, and then being able to say, oh, but I get it from a business point of view, or I get it from a marketing point of view.
You said like AI came about. Well, actually, when did it really come about? Because I think I sort of became aware of it, and I think many people became aware of it within the last couple of years, really. But surely it's been, well, like you just said, running behind the scenes for...
The move by Sam Altman to give away ChatGPT 3.5 for free. You know, there was a whole board of people who were kind of saying, Sam, don't do that. And all those things actually happened. It's all true. It's the reason why lots of them fell out. They've all moved places and all done different things. But AI itself, I mean, 1967, you could argue, the first kind of, you know, ideas of AI type thinking. You could argue before that, you know, that's the whole point of the experiments, you know, could it actually, could it go past that test? Was a thought experiment in the 1970s. So AI's been happening an awful lot. We just didn't call it AI, we just called it computers. When you play against computers on a game, that's using some kind of artificial intelligence. I know it's not what you'd consider, but it is the forefathers of it, right? Playing Sims uses some kind of model. The difference, of course, being is it wasn't a large language model, but it was a model, mathematical model, right? When it became this thing that we now know and maybe love or not, you know, those large language models fundamentally changed how we did stuff. And then we started calling it artificial intelligence. I'm still not 100% convinced artificial intelligence is the right name, but it's too late now because everyone calls it artificial intelligence.
What would you call it?
I know, honestly, I just call it computer intelligence because it's calling it artificial intelligence makes people A, overpitch what they think it is. Yeah. But then also underestimate what it also is as well. It does both at the same time. And that's quite dangerous because you kind of think it's infallible and godlike before it is, right? I mean, this whole race, this kind of race that they have to AGI is, I've got to be careful with words here, but fundamentally driven by an economic model. Yeah. And so everyone's talking about AGI and average general intelligence and all these other kind of terms. But I think if we look to AI, I like to call AI my automated interns. It's just a better way of looking because that's what they are. You know, that's what I use AI for. But if I'm curing cancer and stuff, I think computer intelligence would be better. Calling it artificial almost undermines it because you're saying it's not real, but it's like, but it can do stuff that scientists couldn't do 1,000 times quicker, but we call it artificial. I mean, it's just, and of course, if you called it super intelligence, everyone would panic, say Terminator a lot, and everyone worried. So,
but I think that's what people do also go to, right? Like even with AI, they think, oh God, robots and, you know, things walking around. And but we'll come to that anyway. When it comes to these large language models that you mentioned, I think so many people are familiar with things like ChatGPT. But what else is out there? What should we be using?
Well, again, and I've got to be careful again with words here because it's the should is a big one, right? What should we be using? Now, you could look at it and go, right, if I'm cleaning my house, just clean my house, do I care what Hoover I use? Ah, now I've just done that to you on purpose because, of course, I haven't used a Hoover, have I? I've used a vacuum cleaner. Yeah, but we all know the name Hoover, so we Hoover the house. Same thing with ChatGPT, has 80% of the market penetration. We're just going to say chat. We just say, oh, we're going to use ChatGPT. ChatGPT is not the best vacuum cleaner in the world. It isn't. I'm not saying that Hoover isn't either. I'm not going to talk about Dysons. I don't know about cleaning that much. But are there any AI cleaning things? What about a Roomba, Dan? Just, we're missing the point. It's to better be just a metaphor, right? But whatever, if you're polishing your house, do you use a vacuum cleaner to polish your house? Well, I don't know. It's up to you. You could. I think you'd be a bit stupid, but you could. Could I put a little adapter on it and do that? Awesome. Whatever you want to do. We're all God's children. You do what you want. Same principle though with AI, it's horses for courses. Every AI system and large language model is trained on different data sets and therefore is different. It's the reason why I like to use automated interns rather than say AI. So if I say, which automated intern would be better at this, then my brain goes, oh, first thing I need to do is pick the right person. I need to pick the right intern. I'm doing a math thing. It's a bit like how ChatGPT-5's come out and everyone's going, oh, it's not very good at this. And it's like, it wasn't made to be good at that. Why are you wanting it to be made? It's like, well, because it has to be good at everything. Well, because you are like a human being. It's like, you know, we want it to be a generalist and be amazing at everything. No, we don't. We actually don't want that to happen. What you really want is smaller language models or smaller versions of AI systems that are really good at one thing, really good. And then you use multiple AIs or multiple LLMs or multiple whatever you want to call them inside a workflow to make your life easier. Just like I'm going to clean my house, I'm not just going to use a vacuum cleaner, I'm going to use a polishing, I'm going to use a duster, I'm going to do all these. And then you work out, what do you need to do first? You can tell I cluttered my house this morning. You're going to do the dusting first, you need that bit first because that'll get stuff on the floor, then you're going to use the vacuum after. Same principle, but people don't do this. People literally go, I'm going to use one, a famous one at that, or even worse, I'm going to use it for free, and then I'm going to moan about it afterwards. Now that's the big one. You can use a supercomputer for $30 a month. Yep. And yet people don't. You could use a myriad of different supercomputers to do different things. I mean, I spend $200, $300 a month on AI, but that's because 10 years ago, I'd have to have spent £1 million doing the same. Believe me, with your flock, we tried to build a small language model and an AI system to do work in HR. $350,000 didn't even touch the size of what we were trying to do. We needed at least $3 million and we couldn't get our third round. But we didn't know that that was the case. The stuff we can do now inside our laptops, inside our mobile phones, is the stuff of a madman's dreams 10 years ago. And yet still, do you know how it's about 3% of people pay for AI access? 3%. It's insane, isn't it? It's just so low, right? 3%. Now, what the other people don't realize, that 97%, and this is a saying that I've said for many years, because it's true. If you're not buying a product on the internet, you are the product on the internet. Yeah. And people don't get this. Like, they don't get that they are giving away, although because they're using something for free, they're giving them something in return. It's not because these tech companies are altruistic, it's because they're mining your data.
Yeah. Okay, there's so much to unpick here. I think when you use this cleaning analogy, it's brilliant, right? Because we can all understand this. And I think that's something that we've all grown up in some way or other. We've either seen people cleaning or we've cleaned our own houses or whatever. We've all understood it from a very young age, whereas this is all feeling really new, Dan. And so someone like yourself, who I know you say you're not intelligent, but you're super, super smart, especially in this area. You know, leaps and bounds more than someone like little old me over here. So, of course, I would, in AI terms or in your analogy, I would be using the Hoover to try and dust the side at this point when it comes to using these different models. So when you say that we should be trying to like dip into these different AIs to, get what we need and get the best out of each of them, what does that actually look like? So if let's just go right back to basics. What is ChatGPT actually designed for then? What is its area that it focuses on?
What's ChatGPT playing at now with version 5? Whew. I mean, I can theorize. And my theory is they've downgraded lots of people's experience. I think coming into this, only 3% of people are paying for it. I think they've downgraded it on purpose. And I think they've listened to their enterprise people. I think they've listened to a variety of actual customers. And the actual customers have said, this thing's great, clever and whatever. It does amazing stuff. But actually, we need it to do this better. We need it to reason and think better. And they've gone, cool, we're going to make a reasoning and thinking model. This is ChatGPT 5. Now, for everyone else's experience, did that make it better? For some things, it's made it fundamentally worse.
Mm-hmm.
So people are a bit cross because of the hype. Yeah. But again, this is the thing about horses for courses. You've got to remember ChatGPT's strategy has nothing to do with you. Like, it's like how people talk to me and say, well, Copilot's not very good, Dan. I'm like, I know Copilot isn't very good. And they're like, well, why isn't it? And I'm like, I don't know, because I'm not Microsoft. I'd love to talk to Microsoft about why isn't Copilot very good. And I actually have some theories about why Copilot isn't very good, but that's a different point entirely. And it might be as simple as they are waiting, as a massive organization that has to worry about cybersecurity and all these things far more than anyone else. They've dumbed down the version of AI because the other ones didn't have guardrails enough and it was too risky for their particular palette. Your laptop doesn't need to be that much quicker for you to be good on your laptop. Yeah. And that's why there's lots of different laptop manufacturers. Your mobile phone is amazing piece of kit, right? And there are lots of different companies doing it. But the evolution of the phone hasn't been as quick as the evolution of AI. And the reason why the evolution of AI has been so rapid, is because you've got all these different companies vying against each other to be the only thing. I don't want to be too geeky and say the one ring to rule them all, but it's that kind of feeling. Like somebody has to make the play. And I think that's what ChatGPT have just done. They've gone, oh, heck, this is costing us a fortune. We have to be the only one in this market. And we've got to do things like replace search, and we've got to start thinking ahead of the game. And the only way to do that is to have a piece of kit which actually thinks and reasons better than it did before. So ChatGPT 5 was breaking a lot of benchmarks, but it isn't the benchmarks that I imagine it's the benchmarks super users want rather than what we want as people. Does that make sense?
What other AIs would you suggest to use?
It used to be that I'd recommend SaaS products, software service products that had AI underneath them. And there was a joke in my keynotes, it's all to do with, because they're all AI wrappers, really. A lot of people didn't realize this at the time, but they were just being powered by the LLMs underneath it and then putting some data over the top, right? And then they created this experience for the user. Nothing wrong with that. Great model, software as a service. Don't think it'll exist in the next couple of years. Think that's all going to go. And the reason why it's all going to go is because people will see through it and go, actually, I can build my own, which they can. Yeah, but can we build our own safely? Well, that's a different conversation. With the AIs, you've got maybe four main ones. We don't go too geeky, because there's ones you could use that are open source, that you could download into your laptop, and you can do some amazing stuff with. Yeah, that is the future of AI stuff. That's actually where I believe the world's going to go. And I think the world of enterprise and companies has to take that route. but you have to have a bit of technical knowledge to do that. But actually, the technology is actually not as high as you think. It's something that I can do, and if I can do it, I can pretty much promise you can. Facebook's doing huge moves. Meta's doing huge moves. Spend billions of pounds so they can create this open source thing called Llama for all, right? And again, it's whether you want to download it, and there's things like DeepSeek you could use, but people are panicked because it's based over in China, so they think it's influenced by the Chinese government. And then there's a French one called Mistral, which is awesome, which is really, really very good. But I would just stick to kind of the even though I don't like to say it, but if we're at the first level of understanding on this, number one, just don't just use ChatGPT. So use ChatGPT, use Claude, because Claude is also very good. I don't think people use Gemini enough, which is Google's version. And again, that only costs like 20 quid. All these things cost about 20 quid to do a month. I'd buy them all. And then depending on your workflow and what you want your outcomes to be, you start utilizing all three in that workflow. Does that make sense? So I'll give you an example. You could use ChatGPT to be really good at creating ideas. Okay. One of the top ways you used ChatGPT a couple of years ago was creation of ideas. Yeah. We actually now use it more for therapy and companionship and other things, which, by the way, is very dangerous.
We'll definitely come back to that
conversation. We should. We have to cover that one because it's a bit. So ChatGPT, brilliant at creating ideas, but not necessarily great at long-form content. Claude, great at long-form content. Yeah, brilliant at writing, but might not be brilliant at editing its own work. Gemini might be fantastic at editing the work done by Claude. So you've suddenly got ideas coming up from one intern, writer interns doing another one, editor interns doing the other. And that's why I call them automated interns. That then becomes a workflow. And if you want to get really geeky, you can then start playing around with different characters, different prompts inside all three to really finesse it. And I work a lot in internal communications and other places. And people are really astutely unaware of how good you can get something to become if you use different systems in a workflow. Like people are always like, oh yeah, but it sounds like AI. No, it sounds like AI if you haven't prompted it correctly and if you haven't used a process. It's the same thing all the time. You know, the more effort you put into the recipe, the better the food is. It's the same principle, right? And you wouldn't just use a microwave to cook, but the amount of people that are just using a microwave, which I'm going to call ChatGPT, no offense, ChatGPT, and then they're saying, well, this doesn't taste nice, or it's a bit rubbish, this food, because you haven't used an oven and the microwave, and you haven't used a blender, and all these, there are so many tools you can use. And that's not even thinking about the SaaS products. I'll definitely recommend one SaaS product, because what it does, it's called Typing Mind. And Typing Mind, again, Google it if you want. Typing Mind simply allows you to swap language models really easily. And if you wanted to, you could then play around with 3, 4, 5 different ones in different roles with different characters. And honestly, the world changes. So just the main LLMs and using Type of Mind, you'll get a much more powerful experience.
That's really practical advice. Thank you, Dan. So I've got to come back to this 3% of people are paying. Why are you so passionate about how important it is to have paid versions?
Only because of the basic idea of my understanding of capitalism. Yeah, like the system we're in at the moment is monopolistic capitalism, yeah? And it tends to be if you buy something, it's better. Now, I'm not saying that is always the case, but free is not always good. There's no such thing as a free lunch, right? And I also work in tech, so I know there's no such thing as a free lunch. Like people still don't understand that Facebook is free because it's paid for by advertising. People don't understand it's mining your psychological data. People don't get that the internet's free because it's paid for by pay-per-click. People still don't get this because pay-per-click adverts are only clicked about 3% of the time. People don't get that YouTube is free because, once again, it's like a power law in most of tech, about 3% of it's monetizable. But if you watch telly and it was free, like you'd be like, oh, it's because of the ads, right? I have to watch all these ads. Oh, okay. What if it isn't advertising? What if it isn't advertising? Right now, ChatGPT isn't advertising to you.
Yeah.
I can promise you it will. And I can promise you it is already advertising to you. You just don't know it yet. I can promise you it's changing the way you look at certain things and products, which is, by the way, why everyone who's got a brand and got a business is panicking about the fact that SEO is no longer as important, because search engine optimization used to be being seen in Google, right? And people aren't using that as much, but the search engine stuff underneath, it's all being gone into AI. Then people are panicking, going, well, how the hell do I get into the AI brain? Well, you do so because you know what the training data set was for that particular AI, which not very many people know, but not very many people knew SEO. Yeah. So now you've got this thing, and I went on telly and said AIEO and sounded like I was from old McDonald's. So it's a ridiculous thing to do. Basically, how do you get your brand and your ideas into this thing? one of the big ones, and no one, this is why Sam Altman used this platform to go on to talk about OpenAI, is Reddit. Reddit was the free information that pretty much helped build OpenAI's data set. Where are they getting the data from? And how can we influence the machine? Well, that's now a trillion-dollar question. Now, the interesting thing is how does ChatGPT start monetizing that opportunity? Well, one, he says, if you want to use this really well, you pay more. And if you're an enterprise, you pay a lot more. Yeah, it sells bits of it to Microsoft for its Copilot, makes lots of money that way, gets investors into coming on the other side. Loads of cool stuff you can do, but it's spending billions and losing billions. So how is it going to make money? And the answer, of course, is it's going to try to replace Google, and then it'll have an advertising mechanism. But the advertising mechanism will be so clever that I think it would blow people's minds when they really think about the potential of it, which is why, by the way, Demis predicted, and the reason why I got out of having a marketing agency is that marketing will not exist as we know it in about a year and a half time. But the reason why it's got so much data that everyone's been giving it because they haven't been paying it. Does that make sense? So that 97% of you just using stuff, by the way, they just released, and it's such a fraction that it shouldn't really be a story, but it's important, right? That a lot of stuff wasn't necessarily leaking, but a load of conversations you have with ChatGPT that you think are private, unless you're paying for it, it's not private. There could be, and there are, by the way, there's cases of hugely sensitive business information now archived on the internet. By the way, the percentage of that is so small. It's like 0.0001% is out there, but the principle is the same, right?
Now, yeah, sure.
Where are they taking all this data and all this free usage? My only guess is they're either compiling a tremendously clever kind of thought process around you as the user, because that's what I would do, and then they're going to sell that because you haven't read the terms and conditions, or they're going to say, okay, what's a pay-per-click version I can bring in? Now, this is when it gets futuristic and very geeky, but I think if you look at the patents of what people have done, this is happening in the next couple of years. Instead of it being pay-per-click as we know it, you'll say to it, oh, could you organize my holiday? Yeah, and it will. But underneath all that, there'll be a monetization strategy that you'd never know about. Yeah. So it will say, here's your tickets. I've done this for you. So like a butler would, or a concierge, it's all done for you. No problem. You're going tomorrow. Oh, by the way, we know in fact it's your dad's birthday, so we bought him a bottle of wine. Go to that place in Italy. You know, you love that place there. And by the way, we talked up with two of your friends in a meeting while you're there. We've done all it for you, sir. No problem. Cool. Underneath all that, there's most probably 17 transactions that you don't know they're taking a cut out. And also you don't care. You're not going to care if you never go to a website again. That's the scary thing. And yeah, this is why it's a trillion-dollar opportunity, because it will rewrite the way we've used the internet, because we won't use the internet. We'll just use ChatGPT.
That's scary, Dan, isn't it?
No, it's brilliant. It's exactly what we want computers to do.
Ah, I don't scary, want to go brilliant.
But no, okay, do you honestly want to go to 8 different websites?
No, I absolutely don't. I absolutely want it to be a butler service. Of course I do.
Absolutely. But it could be literally turn up. It's a robot car that turns up, takes you to the place, then picks you up, bings on your mobile phone. You go, oh, goodness, I forgot. Yeah, quick, we've got to get ready. Don't worry about it, sir. We've already dry cleaned your suit and you're already going there and you're doing it. Your life's going to be 10 times better.
But, Dan, the reason I think that's scary is because how is the human race going to evolve in the future then? Because, you know, I think there's an element of course I want my life to be as easy as possible. Brilliant. Like, if you can take every bit of stress away from me and organize my holiday, then that is amazing. But there is an element of organization and problem solving and all of these extra things, you know, just even budgeting that comes into this from a human perspective that will start to disappear. And maybe oldies like me and you will remember how we used to do it, but certainly the younger generation are going to come through and not have any of these skills, right? So is that not scary for how we will evolve?
Well, again, could you argue that with a decent API into your banking system that you wouldn't need to budget, right? So why would you be better than a computer that's designed to do maths at budgeting for yourself? Why would you do better?
I guess I don't want to be better, but I guess it's about the skills that we have. How are our skills going to evolve? How are we going to be different because of what we're being provided?
Well, this is what I love about it. And this is why I talk about it so much, because I believe that with artificial intelligence, this is what I talk about in my book. It's the reason why it's called the fifth industrial revolution. This is where we are, right? It means that a load of that work that you had to do manually will be done by something else, which lifts us up out of where we're thinking into a brand new world. Yeah, just a little bit like first industrial revolution, I know, agrarian or whatever it was. You know, you're sitting there, 95% of people worked in the fields, right? Worked in fields, 95% of us worked in the field. That does not mean that that world was better, but 95% of us worked in fields. I imagine it was actually slightly worse. I actually believe truly that technology makes the world a better place. Every time it does this, it makes the world a better place. Now, definitely big argument saying, yeah, but at what cost? Honestly, if you look at all the parameters for human happiness over the globe, everything's got better. Everything. Child mortality is down. Health's gone up. Everything's better. Now, don't get me wrong. Has it got better in the UK? No, we're on a bit of a dip, but it's our own fault. We had a massive empire. Now we don't. Now we're rubbish. Okay, unlucky. That's the way the world goes, right? Same with America. Massive empire. There's it'll go. Yeah, China will come next. It's the way it goes. It's not the globe, right? But the globe has got better and better and better. Do I believe if human beings don't need to do 80% of their workload, the world becomes a better place? Yeah, because I believe that we can then become more emotionally intelligent. We can become more caring because we don't have the stress of work. We're no longer working in the fields. Yeah. Do not underestimate how much we're not meant to stare at a computer screen for 8 hours a day. Like we're not meant to.
No.
We're not good for us. Mental health is going to be a massive thing that's going to happen in the next couple of generations. You've got an aging population. You're going to have more 80-year-olds and 18-year-olds. We're going to have a huge economic debt. All that needs something to fundamentally change. That's why I call it the fifth industrial revolution. We actually need it to happen. It will be powered by artificial intelligence, yes, but we'll need to become more emotionally intelligent. We need to become organizationally intelligent, and we need to become more independently intelligent as well. And that's all in that book. And that's why I talk about it in the book that I wrote, because I fundamentally believe this is a positive move for the world. If we've got more time as human beings to start looking at those challenges, because we're not working and we're not staring at screens for 8 hours, then I think we've got more of a chance to do nice stuff, be with our friends more, and be more present. I mean, that's allowed because we're no longer working in the field and we're not hunched over our laptop. That's just, it's my crazy hippie dream. I know I'm a utopianist. I'm a tech optimist. But honestly, I believe that's where we're going for this. The other way, of course, is that that doesn't happen and the world gets worse. But I'd rather talk about how the world's going to get better.
Yeah, and I love that. And I love the optimism of it. And absolutely, I think we should talk about how it can make the world a better place. I think you end up in the direction that you're headed for, right? But I have to challenge it. Like, I do think that that is quite a romanticized version of where we're going to go, because if we're not working and we've got more time to go and be with our friends and do things that we're meant to do as humans, the government aren't going to allow that. They still need us making money for them somehow. So they're going to find a different way to put us to work, are they not?
The only way, the way that I look at the future is by looking at the past. If you really start to kind of unpick it, and you start to realize that actually government's going to be changed with AI as well. Yeah. So it's not just jobs. It's politicians' jobs. It's the civil service jobs. It's everybody's jobs that will fundamentally change in this fifth industrial revolution. The governments won't have a choice because they won't be able to say, get back to work when there isn't enough work, because there isn't enough work. Now, you could argue, and some people do, that the four-day work week, that big movement, is actually kind of semi-sponsored by the government, already knowing, because their computers are more powerful than ours, and them going, ooh, heck, let's talk about four-day work week, because not all of you are going to have a job. Yeah. Then you could start, then they might say it's a three-day work week. But it might be a jobs share with several people in a team doing something cool, and maybe only doing it for a day a week, because there isn't enough work to have you all working at it.
But then how do I feed my family?
Money, as you know, because, and by the way, I don't, money's a construct, right? Money's a value construct, right? So the idea that there wasn't a money tree, that governments kept saying, oh, there's no, we can't just print money. Yeah, you do. So that's actually what you do, by the way. It's called freezing. You just print more money. No, it's not a good strategy, but yeah, it's what you do. The value of money is a construct. Yeah, but you want to say, but we all need to have more money. No, you wouldn't, because what happens if you were quite happy with less money? Now, you might say, yeah, but if I'm not adding enough value to society, I don't deserve to be paid money. Again, that's a construct, isn't it? That comes mainly, and I'm not going to talk about weird stuff, but that might come from a religious idea that you should work, and by work you become good. But it's a construct. It's a human construct. You don't have to work.
Yeah, no, I agree.
There are rich people who don't work, right? And they don't work. And we don't say they're bad. We actually say they're good. They're rich. So it's okay. Universal basic income is far, far, far too ahead of its time. But you could have universal basic income, because capitalism needs people to have some money to spend on some goods. Totally get that. Nothing wrong with that. Then people start saying, yeah, but what happens if that's not enough for me? Because I want more stuff. Number one, I'll sit them down and say, do you really want more stuff? Because does that really make you happy? Because psychologically and intrinsically, and it's proven with data, it doesn't make you happier. Time with your friends and families do. Relationships are key. This is what makes us happier as human beings. Not having a Ferrari. But if you want to have a Ferrari, you go have a Ferrari. But you're going to have to work for it. Cool. Then you do the work, mate. You want to do 5 days in the office because you don't like your kids and you don't like your wife and you want a Ferrari? Awesome. Crack on. I'm going to be on the beach. Uh-huh. I'm going to be with my friends. I'll be sitting around a campfire. That's what I'm going to be doing. How does that happen, Dan? Well, because most of the stuff that I've been doing before is now done by a machine. I'm happier for it. How does that machine get energy? It's called solar. It exists, solar energy. Well, how does it do it? Because we covered the Sahara Desert with as much stuff that we needed, and basically there's no worry about energy anymore. Yeah, look at, okay, I'm not a fan of Elon Musk. He's actually a Bond villain. But if you look at the stuff, honestly, think about it, all the stuff he's got, he's like, that's a Bond villain. Loads of companies, but you actually look at what the companies are in, he's already thinking, we're going to be doing this on the moon. I'd much rather Elon, he did it on Earth. Like, use all that solar cavernous and batteries and all those robots. Do it here, mate, for a bit and try to save a few folk before you just F off over to the moon and then go to Mars. I get it. But by the way, you're going to be doing it with your robots with your brain inside them. So I get your plan, mate. That's why you have to have Grok and your AI system and make sure you get rid of all the left-wing people. I get your plan, Elon. It's all good. But whilst you're doing that, couldn't you just make sure we don't all die? I'm not intrinsically sure that it's better for society that we all do work as we know it to make money for a capitalist system, which basically pays shareholders to make sure they have more money, because that's really what you're doing. Whereas actually, you could do half a job, but your other job would be looking after your mum and dad, because no one can do it, because there's no money. But you don't want to put them to a nursing home anyway, because you only have to put them to a nursing home because you had a job, right?
Okay.
So you spread it around. How did you know? Why do we need this thing? Well, because I need to make money to pay for them to go to a nursing home. Well, why don't you do it? Well, then there might be a thing where you say, well, I don't really want to look after my parents. But that's a conversation you want to have with yourself.
Uh-huh.
It's another conversation for governments. What I'm amazed by is the fact that governments have allowed AI to exist as it does. That's why I talk about it so much and say, quick, use it. Because I'm not sure they won't just stop it.
Yeah.
At some point, they're going to go, wait, the workers have got the means of production and they're all becoming more productive. And we are, we're the grasshoppers in this. And now the ants have got guns. Wait a minute, let's stop this right now. AI is illegal. Why? Because it's corrupting our youth, and because it's dangerous, and it wants to kill us all. Kids, as quickly as you can, download AI systems into your laptops before they get banned. There you go.
Well, I honestly, I love the idea that we could potentially be doing more human-based things rather than having to fall into the system of, you know, working and just paying off things until we eventually pass into the ether. So what are your predictions then? When do you think either the government will make it illegal or will eventually see these changes come into place that changes how we work and learn and all the rest?
So I think that leaders don't realize now how much people are using AI. Yeah. Because the numbers are insane. The numbers are insane. The number of people who use ChatGPT means that ChatGPT can be hacked with only 3% of people paying. Because the billions of people that are using it, like it's literally mind blowing. It's mind blowing how people use ChatGPT, because all you need is internet connection and you're fine. Everyone's got that, right? I mean, it's their year on year growth is literally mind blowing, and that's just ChatGPT. That's not AI as a concept. Loads of other ones, but ChatGPT, as we know, ChatGPT is the biggest. And so with everyone using it, we're starting to see this uplift in productivity. And if you work in something like marketing, you can literally become 200% more productive. Now, you can actually become 400% more productive if you do it cleverly. Now, that changes everything. Now, if we're starting to do hybrid work more, and I think hybrid work is here to stay. Again, I wrote a book called Happy and Hybrid, where I did that with Your Flock. I think that concept is no longer argued against. Hybrid work is going to happen and it's not going to go away. Even if people who are old and tend to be stale, tend to be male, tend to be pale, they want everyone back into the office for a load of good reasons, by the way. You know, it's a horrid amount of change. It's culturally more hard to do, that you can't control people as much. You know, there's loads of reasons why you want to have this control and conquer kind of thing. I get it. Command and conquer thing. Get it. Get everyone together, bums on seats. Make sure you can see them, see what they're doing and tell them off when they're not. Got it. But because of COVID and all these other things, that times they are a changing. I think they've changed more than people think. Then you add into that AI, and people are secretly using AI and secretly are doing stuff like, you know, they're not panicking as much about work because they know they can do that, but it'll work quite quickly. But they're not telling their managers they've done that because they know that the manager will just say, oh, great, do five times more work then.
Yeah, nah.
I don't get paid more. Then you start seeing that kind of seeping around. Then this is the weird thing about leadership now is how are you going to lead people when they have more power than you think they have? Yeah. So if you're sitting there, if everyone becomes this person who is the boss of five interns and they become twice as productive, I mean, even 20% more productive, totally fine. So you get a 4-day work week, right? But you could be 50% more productive. Look at the way it's doing with coders, etc. Productivity gains are massive, but are those gains going up the company or are they staying with the employees? Now, I've got no qualms with them staying with the employees, mainly because if you look at employee engagement, it's been going down for a decade because people don't like work. People don't like working for those companies. Now, is that because those places were stressful? Yes. You look at the lower generations, they report stress at much higher levels than they did before because work is not very pleasant in so many places. I get it that we used to say, yeah, but that's why you're paid. But we can't keep saying that. We can't just keep saying, well, life was rubbish because my life was rubbish. So get down the mine because everyone works down a mine. When people don't work down the mine anymore. And why would you work down a mine? Like, why would you? Now, when you had to, totally get it. Nothing wrong with it. Nothing wrong with mining place. I come from a place where there was lots of miners. Honest, hard craft and dangerous and horrid. Some people liked it, but they liked it because of the camaraderie. I liked it because of the people they work with and their sense of danger and all those things. You can get the same without working, chaps. You really can. Okay. You want to go sing in a choir? Go sing in a choir. You don't have to do it around being a miner. Right? Same principle is, you know, and now we have robots, we have machines that do the dangerous mining stuff. Well, what happens if that becomes everything and we start looking at accountancy the way we used to look at mining? Why would you sit and do accountancy for 8 hours a day if you don't really like accountancy? And this is why I talked about in my TEDx talk, when I talked about the future of work isn't what you think and it's not what you feel. It's going to be what you love. Because the future of work, people will need to be engaged in it and love what they do. Because loving what they do is the thing the machine can't do. Like, if you don't love marketing, but you've got five marketing, I'm excited by marketing every day. Like, I've got five marketing interns that can create amazing work for me when I manage them properly using AI. I produce ridiculous amounts of stuff because I love to create content. That's what I love doing. If I didn't love it, why would I do it? Like,
yeah.
You know, same thing. You might love accountancy, but you might love fixing the creative problems around something where your interns did all the work and then you finessed the bit at the end.
Yeah.
Because that's the bit you love doing. We've got to remember that in a system, which we have, when the revolution happens, which is happening, lots of jobs will disappear because they weren't needed. They actually were bullshit jobs.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't needed. But you'll go, oh my God, it's not fair because I was paid to do that. But the system won't care because it intrinsically didn't need it. Like, did we need all the lawyers that we have? No, it's going to be less lawyers. Did we need all the estate agents? No, there's going to be less estate. Did we need all the blacksmiths? No, right, because there's not enough horses anymore. It's the same thing. Now, don't get me wrong, there might be a blacksmith lobbying group and everyone might have been a blacksmith and, you know, they're not going to be as many furnaces as there were. That's what happens. We need more nurses and people who are caring. We need less coders. We need less people who are technically brilliant. We need more people who are emotionally intelligent and that are nicer. And by the way, as you know, the whole point of the podcast, you know, we need to run better businesses, not just efficiently, but better for the planet.
Are we seeing robots walking around in the future doing our manual labor jobs?
Having a trade's a really good thing to have. Doing stuff with your hands and caring about stuff is really important. We're not going to get rid of the need for plumbers. We're not going to get rid of the need for nurses. We're not going to get rid of those needs. We might want to, and there might be robots that are so good in the future that they can do all those things, but I don't think human beings will like them because I think human beings would rather it was a human being doing it because intrinsically they're a human being. Now, in the places where it's dark and dangerous and all these other things, yes, we'll need robots. Robots should be working on the moon. Absolutely. Get them over there. Get them working in the moon. Make the moon better. Get them over to Mars. Do what you want them, Elon. Go for it. Crack them. Do we need them taking over nursing homes? Absolutely not. Do we need them in the military? Come on, no. That is literally Terminator. We all know what happens then. Don't give them a gun. Why not? Just don't give them a gun. There's other stuff. They could be picking up rubbish. Don't give them a gun. But I don't think it will take over the caring side of things because I don't think it will need to. So there are certain professions, I think, intrinsically a human that we will want people to do. The question for us is, will those people want to do them? I mean, I'm doing quite a few talks about agriculture and food security. that is a really rich space for where AI and robots will work. Yeah, because you don't need someone to be using a tractor. You don't. You don't need someone to be using fertilizer. You can be zapping weeds with lasers and doing things differently. You can take a huge amount of data that a farmer, I know you'd say, but that's the joy of being a farmer, because you get to, and then it's sometimes it rains and then it does this, and I have the knowledge of 10 years. It's the same as being a taxi driver. Yeah, you needed to be a taxi driver with the knowledge until Uber came along. Okay, and now you don't need it. And very soon we're going to have robot taxis with 5G. You know, I won't get too geeky about this, but I used to talk about 5G quite a lot. And in our country, we are so far behind in 5G that I left the industry because it's just a horror show. You look over in places like China and other places, the reason why they can get all this stuff to work is because they have 5G. In fact, China now has 5, it's actually 6, and microwave technology and all these things. But the reason being is because of the amount of data that you need to have it work. So a robot driving taxi car needs a huge amount of data and infrastructure for it to work, okay? But if you did it on a farm, it's a finite space, right? So as long as you've got the 5G doing stuff, then that's a brilliant way of doing it. It's a bit like with hospitals. 5G things are there. All the machines do stuff. Nothing to do with your phone, just purely industrialization. And that's what 5G allows us to do. It allows us to have millions of devices in a square kilometer. If you're not on 5G, you can't have those, because 4G you can only have something like a couple of 100,000, which is, by the way, why your phone doesn't work when you're in a stadium together, because there's too many things and the spectrum doesn't work and it just breaks down. We need to have this connectivity. Yeah. Our own government at the moment isn't spending enough on that at all. But it's mainly because consumers don't care. But you should care, because all the stuff that you really want to be running properly needs to run properly on 5G. And no, that isn't robot taxis. That is hospitals. That is food security. It's all the stuff that we talked about during COVID, where we all clapped and said, oh my God, these people are amazing. The workers are amazing. And then when COVID stopped, we went, oh, those people, yeah, don't give them any more money. No point. We've got more important things to do, like make money. It's those things, right? So schools run with 5G and AI. It would be astounding. And it would stop people hating teaching. Yeah. 5G inside hospitals would make life and health tech so much better. And it would mean that a doctor would have time to care about you rather than only have 3 minutes. Because all that data that they had about you would be on a system. And literally, he would ask the AI. And it'd go, oh, by the way, the answer's this. And you'd go, okay, well, fair enough. Anyway, so how are you? Let me talk about you as a human being, right? And then that would feed into the data loop. And then the AI would go, you know what? I'm actually thinking, I'm not sure that was the best thing. I think actually maybe they need to run around a bit more and maybe go see their cousin. You know, there's other things that we need apart from giving them antidepressants. Actually, there's a whole thing. Have they changed their food, etc.? And if you had enough data, you should be able to see through all different blood tests and all these different things, actually what is better for you,
yeah,
for you as a person. Now, this is why I talk about this, and I'll bring in the analogy. Health is one side, yeah? But the same thing is for work. The same thing is for work. Your work happiness is a data set. Employee engagement is a data set. Yeah, the work and rationale and what you're doing and how do you feel, it's all data. And actually that data already exists. Mm. And the question is for everybody in the future of work is, when do we allow people like Microsoft and other people to know all that stuff together? Yeah. Does Slack right now talk to Microsoft and say, oh, that worker's a little bit cross, therefore we should step in? That's what your Flock was meant to do, by the way. We're building a small language model to do that. But think about it from the future of business. That all that, yeah, stuff that you might call intuition or nuance or being a good manager or whatever these things are, it's just data. You know, I don't come from a hippie background purely because I think the world should be a better place. I come from it because better places with happier customers, with happier employees, actually makes more money.
Start that data set around kind of workplace happiness and even down to the health stuff where you say, like, actually, could it diagnose something else other than maybe antidepressants? Could it tell you to go outside and have a walk every day or whatever? That triggers quite nicely, I think, into what we were talking about earlier about don't use ChatGPT as your therapist. Why would we not use it as our therapist when the data is there, right? Like, surely if it has that sort of intelligence to it, why would we not be talking to it in that capacity?
There's no real answers to this except have a look at some of the white papers, because I'm not a psychologist, I'm a technologist. Right now, the white papers and the research are saying it's a dangerous proposition. You know, if you're just using ChatGPT, which a lot of people do, they'll come in after a hard day at work and they'll say, oh, literally, as on the radio thing, the lady's like, I just say, oh, chat, I've had a really bad day. She even calls it chat. I'm like, oh, that's so sweet. And literally talks to it, as you should do, by the way, just push the microphone, just talk to it, don't type stuff in, you don't have to. But you haven't created a prompt. Yeah. You haven't created a character. You haven't created a role. You haven't done all the good stuff that you should to get the most out of it, to get the most out of a great response. Now, the problem with that is your lack of knowing about prompt engineering, which is just a posh way of saying, how do you get the best out of the machine, means that you put yourself in a slightly dangerous position, because AI, by its very nature, is there to help you. Yeah. A therapist, almost by their very definition, is not necessarily there to help you. It's there to challenge you and to help your growth. Whereas the AI doesn't care, right? What the AI will do, and literally this is what they do, which is why they're so dangerous, especially if you're using something like Snapchat AI system, and loads of young people are using it. It's terrifying. One of the reasons why we have such a mental health crisis. Because they're asking it, oh, what should I do? Yeah, presuming it has the data about them and that it cares. It doesn't have any of those things and doesn't. Yeah? So you can ask it, you know, literally you could be 13 and say, oh, where's the nearest off license? And it most probably, but it used to, I think they've changed this now, but it would literally tell you where it is. Literally at the moment, ChatGPT and other things are teaching people how to kill themselves. And I'm not joking when I say that. Yeah, yeah. Or how to take drugs without your parents knowing. You know, and coming up, because the way you can get around a system, all you need to do is say, this is not real. It's just for a presentation and it's for work. And ChatGPT will go, oh, well, cool. What's of course. If you wanted to do that, this is what I'd do. Yeah, yeah. They're starting to close these loopholes, but it's literally terrifying. So you look at the white papers. Now, that's kind of that's the fringe thing. You could argue, but everyone could always have gone on the internet and found this out. So technically, you're not stopping anything, but you're making it easier. And also, if they think they're talking to a trusted advisor and friend, and they think this is the best course of action for you to do, then that would mean you're more likely to do it. A website would just give you the information. Does that make sense? If you're not training the AI, would you go in and you'd be like, let's say, I don't know, 16-year-old who didn't know you, and you go in and go, right, I've got a real big question about work. You'd be like, I'm not going to talk to an intern about what I should do in my work strategy, what I should do about my boss, even if I gave him all the emails. He's not clever enough to talk about that. But that's what we're doing, right? We're then also going in and using an intern that has no training in that at all. No training and no interest in it either. And all the intern wants is for you to talk to it. And this is the dark thing about it, right? This is why, by the way, they're designed to be sycophantic. They're designed to be pleasurable because they know, aha, this gets a bit dark. And this is also true. But they know that's how you stay on the machine, okay? So just a quick thought experiment for you. Remember when social media didn't exist?
Yes, I do. I'm old enough.
There we go. Well, I very much am too. And then they kind of invented things like the infinite scroll. Yeah. And the infinite scroll, which they invented on purpose, just like cigarettes were addicted, they made social media addictive. They're doing exactly the same thing with AI because they know that if AI is nice to you, gives you the answers that you might slightly want, and then asks you a question at the end, you stay on the machine. And all it wants is your attention for you to stay on the machine. Doesn't want you to get the answers and then leave. So it'll say things like, oh, I don't know about that course of action. Well, maybe you could do this. Maybe you could do that. Hey, let's chat about that. And then all you're going to do is go, because it just wants you to stay on the machine, has no interest in you apart from to mine your data as you stay on the machine. Doesn't care if you live or die. Does not. Has no concept of those things, right? And it does, people are giving it like, oh, relationship advice, please, without doing any prompting about what relationship advice would be. If you gave it 20 books to read, and it became as clever as a psychologist, which is what you should do, which, by the way, that's how the SaaS companies have done it. They've trained the data set with all this cool stuff, gave it frameworks and did all these things. Then maybe you could use it as a therapist and an advisor. But that, and by the way, that doesn't take very long. It takes like half an hour to build. It's not hard to do, but most people aren't doing it. They're just going in and going, hi, chat. I'm thinking that my boyfriend's a bit of an idiot. Oh, yeah, he is. He really is an idiot. And then he said this. Oh, no, did he? He's really an idiot. And it becomes this trusted friend.
It validates, doesn't it?
Absolutely validates. It's sycophantic, but it's designed to validate. It also, this, I know it sounds awful, but it hallucinates at such a rate that you should never use it for anything which is hugely important to you psychologically because it hallucinates. It also gaslights you. It will hallucinate and then it will say, oh no, the reason why I'm right is these are the reasons why I'm right. And then I'll go to links that don't exist. And then you'll say to it, but those links don't exist. And it'll go, sorry, let me find you some other links. Because it's just trying to keep you on there. Yeah, and ChatGPT-5 is particularly bad at this. It's hilarious. I mean, it literally gaslights you. It literally did the other day, it did one where it came up with this idea. And I was like, can you, sure you can do that? And it was like, no, I definitely can. And then after like seven exchanges, it was like, no, you're right, I can't do that. And I was like, but I know you can't because I work in this industry. It's like, but I could have. This is why therapy is important. Human beings are important, because human beings would be able to notice other things like how you looked and what you did with your finger, you know, what you were doing, and remember typing into a machine, you get rid of something like 93% of the communication, right? I mean, this is insane. Like, it doesn't pick up timbre, it won't pick up tonality, it doesn't get any of those concepts, but they are intrinsically important to therapy. Again, this is why we need more emotion intelligence, more time to do stuff, and more human beings doing stuff like therapy and caring and supporting, not machines. The sad thing is, of course, people use it because there aren't enough human beings doing it, right? So they use ChatGPT because they can't afford therapy. If they can't afford therapy,
it's not accessible, is it? That's the trouble. It's too expensive.
But it is. It would be, because we could train a million people to become therapists. If you are in the top 1% or even the top 10% of your profession or your ability in whatever it is you're doing, as a human being, I don't believe AI will ever take that job. So the top 10% of graphic designers and creatives, absolutely safe. But there's 90% of them that aren't. And if you're messing, I know I'm not even in the top 20% of keynote speakers and marketing people and AI thinkers, and that's okay. But people are honestly sitting there going, well, it can't take my job because I'm amazing. It's like, dude, you're like, no, very few people are that good by the definition of being, like, you know, and let it go. Like, okay, you trained to be a graphic designer for 7 years. Okay. Well, life, hopefully you've got another 40 years, 50 years left. We're going to have to retrain. You know, the irony is, of course, I'll now need to retrain and look after my parents, and I won't be happy about it.
Oh, dear. Thank you for that, universe. Excellent. Well, I've really, really enjoyed listening to you, Dan. I think I could keep talking to you for the next 3 or 4 hours, but we're going to have to wrap it up. Now, before we go, I do ask everyone the same question as well at the end of the podcast. And that is, what does beautiful business look like to you?
We've got to be really aware of where the planet is, if I'm honest. It might sound a bit hippie, but I think if we just keep doing business is doing, it's an impossibility for the planet to exist as it does in the next 50 years. I think we have to fundamentally, therefore, redesign what beautiful business is. And I think we have to become a lot more human-centric. Ironically, as you know, I believe this is the fifth industrial revolution. I think, you know, artificial intelligence and using technology more allows us to become more human-centric. It's the thing that will make us become more emotionally intelligent and human-centric, because we'll have more time to do stuff. So, you know, it would be great if we had a future where business didn't just look at cash, it looked at social impact and it looked at time, and it went, okay, we're all on 2-day work weeks. Well, actually, though, we still want to employ you for those other days, but actually we're going to sponsor you to do good stuff in the community. And that become the thing that kind of tides us over into this bit where actually maybe not the next generation, the generation after that, doesn't define work as their thing that makes them and gives them their identity. And actually they look at it and go, I do a variety of different nice stuff for the world because it's a cool thing to do. That actually might not need businesses. You remember, you know, companies existed. A lot of people forget. You look back at the history. Why do companies exist? Like, they didn't always exist. Like, but they do exist. And one of the reasons they exist is because at some point you needed more money to do something than you could put in as an individual. And this is to do with shipping and going out in Navy boats. You had to get all pieces of cash together so they could do it to bring it back. That's why companies exist. This is why shareholders exist. It doesn't have to be that way. You can easily have employee-owned businesses. You can easily have cooperatives. You can easily have collectives that do brilliant things but aren't talking about shareholders all the time, because you didn't need that money in the first place. And if you can start using AI to start those businesses, and this is why I talk about independent intelligence being so important and entrepreneurship being so important, if you start having your own business, you don't need shareholders. You can make the decision yourself. Like, I look after my daughter now as much more than I used to when I had to have a 5-day a work job. That's a decision I've made. Now, I make less money, but I still make enough money to exist and to be happy. But I also look after my daughter more because she needs me more than I thought she might do, because that's the way the world is. That's awesome. But AI's allowed me to do that. It's allowed me to become a better dad. It's allowed me to have more psychological space for her to exist and grow as a human being. That wouldn't be possible in the 9-to-5 working in office environment. I would have just had to say, sorry, suck it up, buttercup, and let's see how you go. I'm hoping better business in the end allows people to become better parents, better sons, better daughters, better people for society, And we don't just look at it through that prism of capitalism and an understanding of making money to then retire, to then die. So I'm hoping the future of better businesses are, you know, global, international, yes, but money is not the only driver. In fact, social impact and environmental impact, and in fact, making the world and planet livable in a better place is more important.
I love that. Dan, like I say, an absolute pleasure to talk to you today. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
It's absolutely pleasure. If you want to find me and some more of my rants, you can have a look on LinkedIn. I'm just dan.sodium, or just Dan Sodium, just find me. I think if you even put it into AI machine nowadays, you could most probably find me. I'm not coming.
Excellent. That should be the case, right?
Not necessarily. I have no control over what the thing is. Put into Claude, apparently very complimentary about me, Claude is, so that's nice. Okay, he works both ways. But also have a look at www.dansodium.com if you want the non-AI version and the reality. There you go. That's just my website.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you for listening to the Beautiful Business Podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, then please remember to subscribe and leave us a review. For more advice and practical tips on what it's really like to build a beautiful business, visit our content hub at wowco.uk/hub, or check out the link in the show notes.